Weak economic data drove the major U.S. markets lower on Thursday. The S&P 500 snapped its three-session winning streak. Capital goods orders unexpectedly fell in December, and business activity in the mid-Atlantic declined in February.
SpaceX and Boeing are both building capsules meant to once again carry American astronauts into space aboard American spacecraft. But with the clock ticking down toward a deadline, Reuters has learned NASA has warned both companies about design and safety concerns with their competing systems. Two people with direct knowledge of the program told Reuters that the space agency's concerns go far beyond those listed in a public report released last month.
It may look like a traditional smartphone.
I can unfold it.
Until you open it like a book to reveal a display the size of a small tablet at 7.3 inches. Samsung unveiled this nearly $2,000 folding smartphone during a San Francisco event on Wednesday in a bid to top the technology of Apple and Chinese rivals. The Galaxy Fold will go on sale on April 26th and take advantage of new and faster 5G mobile networks.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's February 22nd, 5:10 in the morning. Thanks for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day also getting underway. We've put together a really good broadcast for you today. Our regulars are here for our Friday edition. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management will start things off this morning. We'll check in with Paul about our portfolios, a couple of economic data points. You heard a little bit of that in the opening montage. A little bit later in the program, Southwest Airlines in their operational emergency as they try to repair jets that have been pulled out for maintenance amid a labor dispute. Brian Summers will be in at about 5:40 this morning to talk more about what's happening at Southwest Airlines and whether or not you should be concerned about it. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward a positive open later on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 112 points this morning. That's good for almost a half a percent. The S&P NASDAQ futures also up about a half a percent this morning. In Europe, markets are in the green as well, with the FTSE in London up nearly a half a percent. In Germany and France, markets up more than a half a percent. And in Asia, the Nikkei has finished the day lower, the Hang Seng and Shanghai higher, the Shanghai up nearly 2%. And oil in the U.S. at $57.26 a barrel, which is up about 37 cents. A couple of stories before we get going this morning. Ford Motor Company has launched an investigation into whether flaws in an internal mathematical model may have caused it to overstate gas mileage and understate pollution from a wide range of vehicles. The company says that in September, a group of employees reported possible problems with a mathematical model used to calculate pollution and mileage, prompting the company to hire an outside firm to run tests. Testing will start with the 2019 Ford Ranger small pickup truck, and if problems are found, the company will start looking at models dating to 2017. Ford says it has no evidence that yet that mileage or pollution numbers are wrong, but that the investigation has just started. The company says it's too early to say how many models might be involved. Former Enron CEO Jeff Skilling has been released from federal custody. Skilling was released yesterday after serving 12 years in prison and 6 months in a halfway house after being convicted of his actions that led to one of the worst corporate meltdowns in history. The 65-year-old was initially sentenced in 2006 to 24 years in prison, fined $45 million for multiple counts of securities fraud, conspiracy, and other crimes. In 2013, the sentence was reduced to 14 years. Houston-based Enron collapsed into bankruptcy in 2001 after years of illicit business deals and accounting tricks that put more than 5,000 people out of work, eliminated more than $2 billion in employee pensions, and rendered worthless $60 billion in Enron stock. Let's begin this morning with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's a senior portfolio manager and SVP there. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, Steve. Good morning.
Well, what did you see this week that you liked, and what did you didn't? What did you see that you didn't like?
Well, the things that we didn't like really were the data points from yesterday that you highlighted in the montage. You know, the economic activity and certainly the New York Fed GDP now model or the Atlanta Fed model is now pointing to economic growth in the 1.5% range, and that's been downgraded from about 2.5% just a few months ago. So durable goods orders came down. The Philly Fed data came down. Housing is weaker. So there were a lot of data points that are pointing to, again, slowing economic activity. And even that said, we don't necessarily forecast a recession, certainly this year, but we're looking forward to 2020, where that may actually start to be increasing in likelihood, which means for portfolios, I think the equity markets will be okay for a while, but as we get through probably the summer months, we'll want to start to shift portfolios a little bit more toward the fixed income side and away from the equity side of the house as we get closer to a potential for a recession.
Yeah, you mentioned the durable goods orders in there. If it weren't for airplane orders, commercial airplane orders, the number would have been significantly lower. What does that say about the manufacturing industry, the manufacturing sector in our country?
Yeah, the manufacturing sector continues to be weak, and it has been weak for a while. If you look at the ISM data or some of the other surveys that take a look at both manufacturing and the services, the manufacturing side has generally been the weaker of the two. Services actually picked up last month, but the manufacturing side has been weak, continues to be weak. The data points are still above that magical 50 level that indicate expansion, and as long as it stays above 50, manufacturing is in the expansionary mode, just a little bit slower if we do get below 50, and that's possible, I think, in the next couple of months, then we could say manufacturing is in a quote-unquote recession. And we saw some of that in early 2016, late 2015, as energy prices collapsed. But it was really more localized in the manufacturing sector. It did create a decline in the equity markets of 10 to 15% or so, but certainly not a recession.
Paul, let's also talk about home sales, down 1.2% in January. But when you look over the last 12 months, down 8.5%. Would-be home buyers seem to be increasingly priced out of the market. The values, the cost of home ownership has become too costly for a lot of people.
That's true. And, you know, we've talked about it before when we highlight the employment data every month. The wage growth is about 3% a year. Housing prices are growing at about 5% a year. And even with lower mortgage prices, or mortgage rates, we're now back to rates that we haven't seen since January of last year. When you take a look at what that mortgage payment is for a typical American, it is higher than what we've seen, and certainly higher, rising at a faster rate than what wages are growing. So that can't continue forever, and that's what we're seeing as pressures in the housing market. So we're looking at that as a potential, another potential point where recession risks are rising.
And all of this yesterday, the reason why we saw the Dow off nearly 103 points, and that the main, all of these data points, the weakness there, all of that, the main reason why we saw the markets fall yesterday?
It is. You know, I think really the markets have been higher here, and we're starting to see a rally this morning on the expectations for a deal with China. And I think that's really what is keeping the markets going at this point. The economic data points are arguing for in a market that should be selling off, or certainly down 3 to 5% or so after the rally that we've seen since Christmas Eve. But we're looking at the markets today, especially as those looking for a deal with China, because we're getting close to that deadline of March 1st next week. That could get pushed out as long as the talks continue to be going well. So that, I think, is really the focus for the markets today.
Paul, I want to just briefly mention it because we've had it a couple times now on the program. Kraft Heinz, I know this is sort of one of the staple stocks that I bet a lot of people have in their portfolios. What should we be doing when we see these news stories this morning about Kraft Heinz?
Yeah, one of the things that's most disturbing is the dividend cut. And it's one of the things that we generally like about the staple stocks is that their earnings are pretty steady to rising over time, and that they raise their dividends over time. It's never a good thing when companies cut their dividend, because what they're trying to do is hang on to the cash for a variety of reasons. In this case, it's the SEC probe. It's much slower sales than what we thought. So it would be one that if we do get a little bit of a bounce here, maybe later in trading today or next week, that would be certainly one that we would be taking out of portfolios if we had it, and looking elsewhere for companies that are growing revenue, are growing their dividend, as well as their bottom line. And that's really one of the things that we really keep a close eye on.
We just heard in Wall Street Now, and I wanted to mention this story as well, this report on the number of credit cards people have. 39 million Americans have been carrying credit card debt for at least the past 2 years, another 8 million saying they can't recall how long that they have been in debt. The question about that compared to, let's say, savings or investing, should people be paying off those credit cards before they do significant investing or savings, or try to pay both of them?
Given the fact that the credit card debt is generally north of 10%, by paying off that credit card, you are essentially saving 10% or earning a 10% return. And since the market's really not been giving you that return, and we're not getting it anywhere close to that in the bond market, you are doing yourself the greatest service by paying off those credit cards as quickly as possible to get to the savings, you know, to get to the point where you can start investing. That said, I would still do a 401k, but I would do it up to the company match, because generally companies will match 50% or 1-to-1 on maybe the first 4 or 5, maybe even up to 6%. Since that return is certainly better than 10, I would at least do that in your 401k plan. But outside of that, it would be very important to pay off those credit cards as quickly as possible.
What else do you like here at the end of the week?
At the end of the week, we're still, you know, actually we've been looking around the markets. We're seeing a little bit of a decline here yesterday. Nothing to, I don't think, really be worried about. So we still do like the equity markets. Probably over the next 3 to 6 months or so, we still do like the international markets. They've come off a little bit after being very strong in the fourth quarter. And we do like the large cap U.S. and a little bit more towards the value names. We've seen the FANG stocks maybe not do as well, Apple's, Amazon's, et cetera. And so we're shifting portfolios a little bit more toward the conservative side. It's something that we started last year. And I think we'll continue to do so as we go through the course of this year, anticipating economic slowing or further slowing later this year and into 2020. So not looking to be super aggressive, but still wanting to participate in what we think could be an okay equity market over the next 3 to 6 months.
You know, we didn't have a lot of time last week to talk about it, but you were in Florida last week for an ETF conference, and a lot of big movers and shakers were down there. What were the headlines that came out of that conference, Paul?
You know, it was interesting. A lot of the people that were talking down there, a lot of the conferences that I went to attend were talking, you know, best ideas, and a lot of the best ideas were the international markets, and emerging markets were really the number one pick for many of the strategists down there. And I think a lot of the reason for it is the characteristics of the emerging markets are very different than what we've seen historically. They're not as commodity-based. They're actually a little bit more technology-based. They're very inexpensive, especially relative to the United States. Many of those countries are not as indebted as a lot of the developed countries are. So there's a lot to like about those. The U.S. markets, a lot of the strategists there were a little bit less excited about, and continue to feel that the bond market may run into some trouble, more on the corporate bond side, as corporate debt could be an issue over the next couple of years. A lot of companies rolling debt in the next 5 years. So there could be some issues there, and that might be one of the things we look at as maybe early signs for a recession later this year and the next.
All right. Paul, how can people get a hold of you and have this conversation one-on-one?
If they want to continue the conversation, they can drop me an email at pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and I'm happy to continue that conversation.
All right, Paul, we appreciate you being with us. As always, have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Paul Nolte, the Senior Vice President, Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everybody. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Our focus now turns to the business of aviation, a growing concern about Southwest Airlines flight operations as negotiations with the airline's mechanics hit the six-year mark and no new contract in sight. Also, the declaration of an operational emergency, which has forced the airline to pull planes out of service and do some rehab and repairs with those maintenance workers, and also even threatening to fire some maintenance workers if they call out sick. Let's bring in Brian Summers this morning via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian is the Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift, skift.com, and at Skift on Twitter. Brian, let's begin with Southwest. What should we all know about this operational emergency?
First of all, Steve, this phrase, operational emergency, is probably the worst phrase in the history of aviation. You shouldn't be calling something an emergency in this situation. You're right, Southwest is having some trouble with the operation. One of the problems is it is canceling many more flights due to maintenance reasons than it ever has. It has about twice as many planes out of service as usual. So the question is why, right? And travelers can be out there and they can be fearful that Southwest is going to be unsafe. I don't know the full story, but I think people need to understand that Southwest is in protracted negotiations with the labor union that represents its maintenance technicians. And often what happens in the airline industry and even other industries is work takes a little bit longer to get done when you're in a labor dispute. And things slow down a little bit. And I think that's what's happening with Southwest. And I'm not just making this up, Steve. The union and the airline have engaged in a war of words this week, mainly via email and via statements and like this. You know, the maintenance technicians say, you know what, we need more time to inspect these planes. It takes a while. And the airline says, you might be engaging in a work slowdown here. So long story short, Southwest is having way, way more maintenance cancellations than they usually do. And people need to be prepared, not that their aircraft is going to be unsafe, because that's not going to happen, Steve. But their flight might be canceled or delayed until Southwest can figure this out.
You know, Southwest told the workers on, I think, February 15th that they risk being fired if they decline to take some of these overtime assignments. That would seem to be ratcheting up the stress in this negotiation back and forth.
Absolutely. The other thing that Southwest said when they were announcing their operational emergency is that if you wanted to take the day off because you said that you were sick, you would need a doctor's note. That suggests to me that Southwest thinks that maybe some of the mechanics who are unhappy that this labor negotiation has taken so long, you know, might be calling in sick when they don't need to, or at least that's what the airline thinks. I don't know how this is going to be resolved. It's been 6 years that the maintenance technicians have been working and trying to work on a new contract. They rejected a contract last year. These two sides need to agree on a new contract. I just don't know when it's going to happen.
Yeah. And in the meantime, all of us are caught in the middle of it, but it's comforting to know that some of these planes are getting, you know, are not going to be dangerous to fly on.
Indeed. And we see this more often than I would like to say in the airline industry. Sometimes we'll see it with pilots. When pilots are negotiating a big new union contract, sometimes flights get delayed, more pilots call in sick, things like that.
There's another story at skift.com this week about the airline industry's glass ceiling. I know you and I have talked before about the so few CEOs are women in the industry. What is the report about, and why should we all take notice?
It's bad, Steve. A colleague of mine wrote a very long report. It's very interesting. You should check it out on skift.com. about just why there are so few female top executives in the airline industry. And to give you an idea, I mean, there are hundreds of airlines out there of pretty big size. We only found one of them with a female CEO, and that airline is a small UK airline called FlyBE. I'm sure there are a few more, but there are no big airlines out there in the world with female CEOs. You know, it's hard to pinpoint exactly what the problem is. We do hear a lot that the airline industry is an old boys network. It shouldn't be. We did quote somebody in the story who said, look, I mean, you have to have a business background to run an airline. You don't necessarily have to have a like straight aviation background, right? You don't have to come up as a mechanic. You don't have to come up as a pilot. You just have to know business. So, you know, these things should change over time, but right now it's pretty ugly out there. You know, a lot of airlines can point and say, you know what, we're getting better. You know, JetBlue Airways has a female president. American, United, and Alaska Airlines have female CIOs that handle the IT. But this is just not where it needs to be, and I'm not sure that anybody has great answers.
Yeah, and the story, and when you read through the story, and I recommend it as well, I mean, some of these male CEOs and other executives at airlines were even sort of scared to comment and talk about the pursuing of gender parity.
Yeah, you know, some airlines will talk about it more than others. It's a long way away from us in the United States. Qantas has really been working on gender parity. But for the most part, airlines just seem to stand in place. They get a little bit better, but only a little bit.
This story talks about some of the first steps that could be taken to change this problem and fix the issue, and that is more mentoring, more recruiting. All those things sound like good ideas.
They do. And these are things that are used in a lot of industries to pretty good success. And I hate to say that I don't have the answers, but I don't have the answers, Steve. It's ridiculous.
Well, we'll stay tuned for that. You have written another story this week about Aeromexico. The company is still struggling while other North American airlines are reporting profits.
Yeah, you know, Aeromexico is having a tough time. There are various reasons for it. Some of them are more simple than others. I mean, look, Americans aren't wanting to travel to Mexico in the same way that they did several years ago. Part of that could be the Trump effect. Part of it is certainly this idea of people are asking, is Mexico safe? Is it not safe? So things like that. You know, foreign airlines also have another problem, Steve, that I don't think a lot of people think about. They earn most of their revenue in whatever the local currency is. So in this case, it's Mexican pesos. But you don't buy fuel in Mexican pesos. All over the world, fuel is priced in U.S. dollars. So Aeromexico had this dual problem of fuel prices went up. They went up in the United States, but then the value of the peso went down against the dollar. So they ended up paying a lot, effectively, more for fuel than any other airline in the world, and that really hurt them.
Yeah, are there safety concerns at all with Aeromexico, or are they do they stand pretty good in when it comes to safety?
They stand fine when it comes to safety. They're a big global airline, and in fact, they've said that their long haul business, so flying people into deep South America and Europe and things like that, performs better than short haul. I mean, you know, there are basically, I think there are five big global airlines in North America. I would say, you know, United, American, Delta, Aeromexico, and Air Canada. Those are big airlines that you can feel very safe flying. They all have very high safety standards, and you know, they're good airlines. It's just that Mexico is a tough market right now.
Yeah, and just like here in the United States, there's some low-cost carriers down there that are challenging Aeromexico. I'm thinking of Volaris and Interjet. So that's this a similar problem there as it is here.
Yes, and I don't want to get too wonky here, Steve, but within about 2 years ago, and going back in history, the U.S. and Mexico air market was actually very protected. So the governments on both sides told airlines what routes they could fly and how often. And like a lot of markets, U.S.-Mexico air markets were liberalized within the last year or two. And the liberalization has been great for fares, right? Because more airlines have added more flights. but airlines lost this protected monopoly. And I think that too much capacity came into the market too quickly. There were all these airlines, say Southwest and JetBlue, both of them, they had a lot of trouble getting into Mexico when the market was protected. Then the market opened up, they added flights, and it's been a disaster, not only for JetBlue and Southwest, who have both pulled back since then, but also Aeromexico, because they had these routes that were great performers in the past. New competitors came in, fares went down, and all of a sudden yields went down as well.
Brian, I can't speak for everybody, but we love it when you get wonky, so don't stop.
All right, my pleasure.
We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers, Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com. That's at Skift on Twitter. Make sure you follow Brian as well at Brian Summers on Twitter. And make sure to sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report, which arrives in your inbox at skift.com/airline.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street today. Dow futures are up 129 points, nearly a half a percent. S&P futures up nearly a half a percent as well. NASDAQ futures up more than a half a percent this morning. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Orion Samuelson is with us. Good morning, Orion.
And good morning to you. Quite a in the agricultural commodity trade yesterday, we had the limit-up move for lean hog contracts at the Mercantile Exchange, and wheat futures rebounded as well, and soybeans and corn firmed. Again, was reason the reason given and the subject that was talked about is talk of the U.S.-China trade agreement making some progress. One trader said the key driver for today is what is happening with the U.S.-China trade talks. And so at the end of the trading day yesterday, we saw wheat bouncing back. But as I said, we had the lean hog contract gaining yesterday the $3 daily limit. Again, concern about U.S. and Chinese trade negotiations, and also concern about African swine fever cutting into the supply of pork in China, which is the far and away the largest pork producer and consumer on the planet. And the agricultural outlook for them, USDA, got underway in Washington yesterday, and the first reports we have from there came from the chief economist at USDA, Robert Johansson. He said the department expects the value of U.S. farm exports to drop by $1.9 billion. That would put it at $141.5 billion in fiscal 2019 compared to 2018. So we'll continue to watch the trade talks and see if we can finally get a reason to stop talking about China-U.S. trade for a while, yeah, because we've been doing it forever.
That would be nice. The one bright spot I saw, Orion, that was that seems different from recent weeks is that there was a report that they were putting putting some touches on letters of understanding on issues, including agriculture was one of them. So perhaps those issues have already been settled or are close to being settled. That seems like a positive development.
Well, if they put them down in memos of referendum or whatever else they call it, that could be an indication that maybe they are getting close. Meanwhile, it takes forever to get approval for a new crop protection product. But yesterday, Dow DuPont won the final international regulatory approval needed from the Philippines for a global launch of a new line of genetically engineered soybeans. And that approval means seed companies will be able to sell the soybeans. The name of the bean is Enlist E3. They'll be able to sell it to farmers as soon as this spring without worrying about taking extra steps to keep the harvests out of export channels that can cause real problems. We still have lawsuits going on similar situations from several years ago. So timely for Dow DuPont because the Commodity Classic gets underway a week from today in Orlando, Florida, and that's the the big seed trade show of the year, and so they'll be able to promote their Enlist E3. So that'll be on the docket for next week.
What's on the morning show tomorrow?
On the morning show tomorrow, well, we're going to be talking about retirement plans, not just for non-farmers, but for farmers as well. And we're going to, as always, talk markets. Jim McCormick will be our market specialist. He'll be on with us tomorrow morning.
All right, Orion, thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
You too.
The morning show at 5 o'clock on 720 WGN tomorrow morning. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Friday, February 22nd. Not a lot on the calendar today. We'll hear a number of Fed speakers, including Patrick Harker and James Bullard, a couple of speeches today that could move monetary policy, but not much in the way of economic policy. We'll be watching a couple of stocks of local interest, continuing to watch Kraft Heinz Company, which is off nearly 21% now in extended after-hours trading after killing its reducing its dividend and also having some trouble in its fourth quarter. So Kraft Heinz, ticker symbol KHC, is one that we'll be watching as we move forward through today. So there's very few things, but still a lot that could impact the markets today as we move forward on this Friday, February the 22nd.